All right, we are going to turn now to David's paper on the dynamo and the computer, which we're going to use as a basis for discussing general purpose technologies, what are also sometimes called foundational technologies. The paper on the dynamo and the computer, I think, is super enlightening, but it's also a little bit difficult to understand because it's addressing a very specific debate. But I think it's the things it teaches us reach quite far beyond that particular debate, and it's kind of in that spirit that we're going to read the paper. I'm going to talk a little bit about the particular debate it addresses first, and then we'll broaden it out a little bit. Specifically, what David is interested in explaining is what's called the productivity paradox. This is emphatically not the same as Abernathy's productivity dilemma, and you want to be really cognizant of that as you're reading the paper. The productivity paradox is this interesting, intriguing phenomenon that in a period of substantial innovation, you can see very little growth at the level of the economy, right? So during a period of industrial revolution, what you can end up seeing is that there's actually very little actual growth happening, even as you see substantial innovation throughout the economy. Around the time that David is writing this paper, the particular thing that they're concerned about and that economists are concerned about and that he's concerned about is that there is so much progress happening in information technology and with computers, but the productivity of the economy as measured by what's called total factor productivity doesn't seem to be improving all that much. This is something which is surprising and disheartening for economists. And Robert Solow, one of the really great thinkers on this, is quoted as saying, quite illustratively, that computers are everywhere but in the productivity statistics. And so the question is, how can that be? Well, the answer to that question is that computers and IT are what we would call a general purpose technology. They have particular characteristics that explain why there can be so much innovation and so little productivity improvement. Okay, so what David does is to say that computers represent this particular kind of technological change by being a general purpose technology. And to make that case, he's going to compare computers to an earlier case, a pretty widely recognized example of a general purpose technology. And he's going to explain why there's this delay in productivity improvement. The case that he's going to look at and compare computers to is the electric motor, the dynamo. Much like you saw a productivity paradox around computers, you actually also saw it around the introduction of the dynamo. And it's the reason for this gap that interests David, the gap between the invention of the innovation, right, the development of it, its adoption, and its ultimate effects. Okay, so here's what David says, right? So in the early 1900s, electricity, right, the thing that you use to power a dynamo, electricity was primarily used for lighting, and only some 3% of U.S. homes had it, right? So it's really limited in commercial use. In the industrial context, only about 5% of energy consumption was supplied by electricity, and it took about 20 years before that figure made it up to 50%, right? So the real industrial use of electricity was only started taking off when centralized electricity production was the real thing. I mean, when factories didn't need to generate the electricity themselves, but electricity was something that was supplied, right? It came through wires from elsewhere. At the same time, you didn't start replacing machines driven by steam with machines powered by electricity before the old machines really needed replacement, right? That's a process of wearing down of the production material. That's going to take some time. Without that wearing down of the production equipment, it's not going to make sense to shift to electric machines as opposed to the steam machines you already have, because basically the calculus is not there for it to make sense, right? Also, and this I think is profoundly interesting, the electric motors and dynamos made it possible to set up plants differently, right? it made it possible to organize production in a different way. And that takes time to identify those opportunities and to implement them as well, right? That actually also means that there's going to be a time delay here, because it's not just about getting the new machine, it's about getting a whole new factory, because the factory, in order to fully benefit from the dynamo, isn't just going to be the same old factory. It's going to be a new factory that's set up in a completely different way. With steam engines, and before that hydropower, you typically had just one source of energy in the plant, right? And then you'd use belts and axles and all kinds of things to transmit that energy to the individual machines. With electricity, you suddenly can have really very, very many small energy sources, right? You don't need a central axle moving through the factory. You can suddenly just have a wire moving through a factory, and then that can power the individual machine. And this meant that the factory floor didn't have to be built around those shafts and belts, but could be planned in what was suddenly seen as a more rational way, right? You can spread the machines more. You can have plants consisting of only single floors instead of the multi-level things that you had before. And you can build the factories of lighter materials, and you can organize work differently. It can also be much safer for workers, which is an added bonus, right? Now, all these things are going to take time, much in the same sense that Shane talks about it. It's going to be a widely distributed process of finding out how to make things work on the ground, exactly how far you can apply a particular idea, how far you can drive it. In principle and in headlines, it's quite clear what is possible, right? You could a priori, you could kind of tell, okay, these are the things that are going to be possible if we move from steam power to electricity. But there's so much contextual adaptation that has to be done to make those general ideas work on the ground, right? So that's kind of what the really short story of what happened with the dynamo, right? But in relation to information technology, the argument is that one can expect it to take time to materialize in its effect, because it's not the immediate improvements that are important, but the distant ones, right? Much like how you think about this, the transition from the steam engine to electricity, it's not about like the real kicker, the real productivity improvement. It doesn't come from making the immediate shift and just electrifying what was once steam powered. No, it's in that, just to make the analogy, is it's not so much that you start typing on a computer instead of a typewriter that makes you more productive. It's the profound changes. It's the reorganization of work. It's the reorganization of factories, right? And in the context of IT, it's fundamentally not about having your workers use a computer. It's about changing the kind of work that they do, right? This is similar to what we see today. We're only beginning to really see the consequences of IT really pulling through, as you can have more distributed work being done, you can have whole new kinds of work, and you can have computers taking over a much greater share of work that humans did before, right? It's only now that computers are mature enough for us to actually start having a conversation about artificial intelligence. And that's a full sweep of information technology as a general purpose technology pulling through, right? It's only when we start to connect computers over the internet that we can transform the way we communicate and replace the need to physically move people or information. It's only when when computers and the internet are widespread that we can transform the way people interact and rethink the nature of commerce, the nature of transportation. And it's only when you couple all that together with cheap sensors that are widely distributed that science fiction-like ideas about robots, for instance, become a genuine opportunity and not just a science fiction phantasm, right? So in other words, what's really important to understand about general purpose technologies and their effects is that those effects, while apparent in principle, might take substantial time to unfold, right? So there are a couple of other characteristics that are not fully described in David's article, but which characterize general purpose technologies, and they're not on the curriculum. So I'm going to provide some links to them if they're of interest to you, and otherwise you can just search them out. Okay, so the first point I'm going to draw from Bresnahan and Trachtenberg's paper called General Purpose Technologies, Engines of Growth. There's also a book chapter by Jovanovic and Rousseau that's just simply called General Purpose Technologies. And finally, there's a paper by Rosenberg and Trachtenberg. It's called A General Purpose Technology at Work, the Coreless Steam Engine in the Late 19th Century United States, right? As I said, come to talk to me if you want the specific links. The reason I'm going to bring these up is because they illuminate different aspects of what it is that a general purpose technology does. And they're going to help us think a little bit about the defining characteristics of general purpose technologies, right? So, one thing that's important to understand about a general purpose technology is that it has so significant improvement potential, right? If you think about that in Fosterian terms, right, thinking back to the S-curve, the way that you should think about a general purpose technology is as a dramatically drawn out S-curve, right? There's going to be a very high limit, an ultimate performance limit on a general purpose technology's S-curve. So there's going to be lots of room for improvement, right? And if you put that together with David's observation that it takes a long time to see the full effect of a general purpose technology pull through, then you can see why you have an exaggerated S-curve, right? You have both a very high limit and a very drawn out process. So that's going to stretch the S-curve both in the X and Y dimensions, right? Very, very long and very, very high S-curve. In March's concepts, one could say that a general purpose technology is dramatically more explorative than conventional technologies, right? Normal technologies, normal in citations, have an uncertainty of its of application and potential, but a foundational technology has an even greater uncertainty, and the distance in time between investment and payoff is going to be much, much longer. You can think about that particularly in the context of IT, right? David's paper at that time was arguing that it's now that information technology is going to start to have effects. And today, much, much later, we can say it's just now that it's beginning to pull through, right? So the Fosterian question of what when all hell breaks loose is continually pushed. And that's what defines a general purpose technology, that there's so much room for improvement, right? It's also possible to innovate very much on top of and around a general purpose technology. And that's what's sometimes called an innovational complementarity, which means that innovation makes more innovation possible, right? So if you think about that, what's important about the computer, for instance, is not the invention of the computer. It's all the other inventions that the computer makes possible, and that we're just seeing around us today, right? Artificial intelligence, new forms of currency, new forms of communication, and all those things that weren't inherent in the original innovation, but are based on it, right? We can put that together with Shane's ideas about opportunity discovery that we discussed earlier. The more a technology is seen, the easier it is to see alternative applications, because there will be more eyeballs on it. And the more it improves, the easier it's going to be to imagine those alternative applications, right? The more it develops, the more options also arise for combining it with other technologies. And then that creates a basis for something entirely new to occur. For example, one really interesting case of this is when Tim O'Reilly in an Econ Talk podcast that I will also happily provide links to, talks about how all the components that were needed for a company like Uber to work, right? All those different components are all basically innovated around the technologies of information technology, but weren't inherent in the original invention of neither computers or the telephone system, right? But they are something that it becomes possible to develop on top of and around those general purpose technologies, right? Those opportunities for combinations gradually emerge as all of these technologies develop independently and together, and as more people are exposed to and work with the technologies. It's also typically the case that a general purpose technology will get developed for one purpose, but that many alternative options emerge over time. So for instance, electricity in private homes was only meant to be used for lighting. That was kind of the way it was thought about. It was introduced as this opportunity to get rid of gas, right? As a prime method of lighting. But gradually, more and more applications arise, right? And you can kind of see a really good illustration of that if you can find the TED Talk with Jeff Bezos, the CEO of Amazon, where he talked about how the first electrical appliances had cables that ended not in the plugs that we recognize today, but in a plug that you kind of screw in place of a lamp, right? So this was something that arose when people initially installed electricity for lighting, but then saw the opportunity for using electricity to power other household appliances, right? And then before the actual plug that we know today, that you plug something into the wall, the only way of getting electricity out and using it to power something else came from these very alternative plugs, right? You can see that if you find his TED Talk. A more recent example, I think, is the blockchain, which was invented as a component part of a technology called Bitcoin, but proves today to be useful for all kinds of things, right? Smart contracts, inventory management, food tracking, value exchange in many different forms. If you want to read more about that, I recommend the paper called The Truth About Blockchain, published in the Harvard Business Review in January 2017. And that's written by Marco Iansidi and Karim Lakhani, right? So basically, this idea that these additional options are going to emerge over time through essentially a process of entrepreneurial opportunity discovery. Another thing you want to think about in relation to general purpose technologies is that they have very far-reaching consequences over time, both in terms of industrial and economic change that they bring about and in terms of social change, right? So first, we can obviously think about general purpose technologies as an engine of creative destruction, right? They can fundamentally change how industries work, and they can allow some established actors to be overtaken by new players who are not weighed down by an existing production apparatus, but have the opportunity to commit solely to a new technology, right? If you have no production material that you need to write off, but can commit fully to a new one, then there's an opportunity for certain forms of entrepreneurship, right? In that sense, they can also be a lever for disruptive innovation by enabling a new way to deliver a product or a service to another. For example, the way the internet allows you to switch from using music on a CD to only using music that you download, and later, as the internet improves further, through streaming, right? In that sense, they can allow for new opportunities to be created, and especially also disruptive innovations, right? We can also see general purpose technologies as engines of social change, and thus creative destruction in the slightly broader sense that I talked about in the first class. The steam engine, for instance, replaced hydropower as a primary source of energy in industry, right? At that time, industry meant mostly textile industry, as we will return to when we discuss the future of work. And it had a number of effects besides just changing production technology and changing the organization of industrial firms, right? It also meant that one could suddenly move production away from large rivers that supplied hydroelectric power or supplied hydropower, and you could move it into cities where you could rely on steam engines and localized energy production, right? That also had an impact for who worked in the factories, right? It also meant that labor markets could suddenly change because you didn't have factories distributed wherever river current was strong, but now suddenly could have much thicker labor markets, again, something that we will return to as we discuss the future of work, right? It's because of these effects, all this follow-on innovation, all this social change, that Bresnahan and Treitenberg describe general purpose technologies as engines of growth, right? basically, before moving on to the next article, I'd like to make a final comment about general purpose technologies as engines of growth, right? There's a pretty big discussion in economic history that deals with what kind of innovation is most important for economic growth, right? On the one hand, there's one idea that it's a few general purpose technologies that really drive growth, right? That the reason we see the kind of dramatic growth that we talked about in the first class, that all comes from general purpose technologies driving driving new opportunities, right? So some inventors in basic research get a very, very basic role because they're the things that give rise to general purpose technologies, right? On the other hand, there's this idea that it's not so much the general purpose technologies, but that it's a multitude of incremental innovation that drives growth, right? You can see this expressed in James Besson's work on learning by doing that we'll be reading later, or in something like Edmund Phelps and mass flourishing. I think the consensus position, the way that you probably want to think about this, is that there's going to be an interaction between general purpose technologies and the more distributed incremental innovation, right? So in a sense, what general purpose technologies does is not so much that they themselves create an insane amount of improvement, but rather that they enable a stream of incremental innovations and architectural innovations, and that it's the sum of that innovation that really creates aggregate growth. So put it another way, you need to have general purpose technologies to make the jump to a new space in which you can have incremental improvement, right? The economic historian Joel Mokyr is a good exponent of that understanding, and I'll provide links and references to some of his discussions, right? Okay, with that, we are going to close our discussion of general purpose technologies, and we're going to move on to the idea of technology interdependence, right? We'll return after the break.